This is a previously recorded episode.
This show is broadcasting live from the Podcast Detroit studios in Royal Oak, Michigan. For more information about the show or our network, please visit www.podcastdetroit.com.
It'll be too easy to talk about nothing, to talk about nothing. Be too easy to talk like I'm something. I'm balling, I'm stunting. Be too easy chasing the fame. Playing the game, it'll be too easy. But tell them we don't feel that. No, no, tell them we don't feel that. I'm bored with this music.
Hey, everybody, thanks so much for tuning in to the inaugural episode of Leading Questions with Calvin Moore. I am your host, Calvin Moore, and I am actually here with my co-host, Kent Strait. What's up, Kent?
Hey, what's up? That's not really my personality. Hey, everybody, how's it going?
So this is kind of an introductory episode. We'll talk a little bit later on about how this show works, but we wanted to just kind of sit down and talk with each other, ask each other some questions, interview each other, so to speak, because it will be primarily an interview show. So we wanted to kind of let you guys get to know who we are. So I don't know if this is episode one or if this is like episode 00, like in comic books where they do like an episode, like a issue zero. I'm not sure how we'll number this.
When was the last time you read a comic book?
Before I came on the podcast today.
Oh, today?
Yes.
Okay, because I last read a comic book in 1987. Nope, 92.
Some of our listeners were not even alive. Okay, yep. So
it's the death of Superman, Superman 75.
That was a good
issue. That was great. And that was not the last one I read, because I read the entire run of the War of the Superman, where there were four Supermen But that was the last
was good
comic
stuff.
Book I read.
It's good stuff. It's all collected.
Yeah.
If you want it, you can go to your local Barnes & Noble.
Mm-hmm.
That's free Barnes & Noble.
There's one left.
Please support us. Anyhow, so we're going to interview each other, and so we basically, you know, kind of have a scripted list of questions we're going to ask each other. We don't know what the other person's going to say. So we know what the questions are, but we don't know what the other person's going to say. So, Kent, why don't you ask the first question?
Calvin Thomas Moore.
Really?
That's not your middle name?
No.
What's your middle name?
Is that the first interview question?
I don't know.
Okay, that's a pretty easy one. My middle name is Ijon.
Ijon?
Ijon.
How do you spell
it? It's like Dijon without the D. E'J-O-N. My mother majored in French. And thought it sounded French, and she made it up.
So it's not French for anything specific.
It's not French for anything at all.
Calvin Thomas Moore. Do you have to be in love to write a love song? Do you have to be sad to write a sad song? Why do you love music? Wrong set of questions.
Okay,
that is the wrong set of questions.
But, I mean,
okay.
I can answer them. I can try.
Knock yourself out. Sure.
No, I'm not going to try to answer either of those questions.
All right, just tell us a little bit about Calvin. What makes you tick? What makes you you? If you were a tree, what kind of tree would you be?
Well, I would definitely be a mighty oak.
Okay.
And this kid would come along, and he'd have some needs, and I'd be like, get out of here, kid! I'm a tree! And that would be the end of that story. Shel Silverstein would not get any money or traction out of that. It would be The Non-Giving Tree. It would be the name of that book.
Okay.
But anyhow, I digress. So who am I? Who's Calvin Moore? Well, I'm a guy who loves history. Before I fell in love with history, I grew up in a military family. My dad was in the United States Marine Corps, went to the Naval Academy, met my mom.
Semper Fi.
Semper Fi, always faithful. And, you know, one thing led to another. They had my brother, then they had the rest of us. And so we moved all over, which was really cool. And my mother, because we were moving all over, we were a standard nuclear family, African-American family, but we were around a lot of different ethnicities, different cultures, which was great, but we were never fully around just black people. My mother wanted to instill in us.
Whoa. You're black?
I am definitely black.
Okay.
I think I already studied it.
Elephant in the room.
Yes. Okay. Got that out of here. My mother wanted us to understand our culture, and so she introduced all four of us, more children, to the miniseries known as Roots, all 1 million hours of it. And then she made us watch Roots, The Next Generation, and then she made us watch Queen. This is sad that I'm saying this. Thankfully, Alex Haley died in the middle of writing Queen.
Pull us out of the fire.
Otherwise, I would have had to watch some other miniseries, because Queen was the other side of his family. So the Kunta Kinte, Roots, all that's one side of his family. He decided to research the other side of his family, and that's where he started off with Queen.
Other than your other than race, the difference between you and I primarily is that of Roots, the Next Generation, and Queen, you have seen all of them, and I have seen none of them.
Well,
so,
that's not surprising.
I mean, I know, I know who Alex Haley is.
Yes, was.
He has died, and I want to say that Halle Berry was in Queen.
Halle Berry was in Queen.
Was that a TV project?
It was a TV project.
Before she was Halle Berry movie
Before
star.
She was Halle
okay.
Berry.
All right. Yeah. That is comes from a lifetime of reading TV Guide as a teenager.
Wow, TV yeah. Guide. Is that even still printed?
It used to be a thing. I don't know.
I used to love getting the episodes of that, and like I collect all four covers if it was a Star Trek cover. But anyway, so raising a military family wasn't around our culture, so my mom definitely instilled in us our culture by making us watch Roots. She made us go watch Malcolm X at the movie theater with Denzel Washington.
Plymouth Rock didn't. Dang it.
Just stop.
Okay.
We didn't. So, okay. Anyhow, that was kind of my first foray into history. And my mother was a family historian as well. So she would go. I remember her hopping in the car. We lived in North Carolina at this point. She would drive down to Spartanburg, South Carolina. She would go to the library in Spartanburg, South Carolina. She'd go through the microfiche. She would get all the census data and find out all these people that we used to be related to and what plantation we were on. She would visit the plantations that were now, museums. Obviously, they're no longer in operation. And so that kind of sparked in me a love for history. Ended up, going to a nice private high school, ended up going to a nice private college, ended up getting a major, got a degree, a Bachelor of Science in History and Bachelor of Arts in Christian Ministry. And so just really loved history or loved religious history, dove headlong into that. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of me. I mean, obviously, I like long walks on the beach. I'm a craft brew guy as well. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm a guy who is ultimately settled in the city of Detroit. It's a 315-year-old city, and I give tours in the city, which we'll talk about some other time, getting to share with people the history of this great area, which is really cool. That's kind of who I am and what makes me tick, but also fostering dialogue, which we'll get to a little bit later in this conversation. That's a big deal for me as well, but I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. Let's turn that question back on you. So who is Kent Strait? What makes you tick? Who are you?
I am a 30-something, and by that I mean 41, year-old insurance broker who likes football. And here's where I was going to say long walks on the beach, and you totally stole it from
me. It happens.
So it's not funny anymore. I like football, long walks on the beach. By that I mean short walks on the beach, because sand is not great for my joints.
Because you're 30-something.
I am.
41.
I am. It's only been in the last couple of years. I don't know.
Yeah, I've been working out, and I'm like, I like to go in because I'm a pretty slim guy. I lift a weight, and my arm just triples in size just by lifting one weight. But I swear, I think I can walk in and be like that, and then I go home and I'm going, oh my gosh, everything on my body hurts right now. So yeah,
exactly.
Don't get old, people.
I am, considering that I am a 41-year-old white guy, I am improbably enthralled with 80s-era Broadway theater. And if you want, I will do the entire first song of Hamilton. I'll do it. Dare me. Say it. How does a bastard orphan son of a whore? Okay.
All right.
And a Scotsman.
The crazy thing is people probably just started singing along.
I know. I know.
I may or may not have a soundtrack.
$10 founding father. I identify as straight. I have been a Christian for 30-something of those 41 years.
Okay.
And in all that time have never not been a member of a church. That's a big part of my identity. I'm passionate about politics.
Yeah, I think the other night, so Kent and I, we're friends offline as well, and we do trivia.
Friends may be
a strong
overstating.
Word, right?
Yes, overstating.
Okay. But for people for lack of a better word, right? Mm-hmm. So we're quote unquote friends, and we do trivia on Monday nights. And he had to leave immediately after because he was going to a friend's house to watch the beginning of the Republican convention, right? Republican convention? Democratic convention.
The same deal last week, because I bolted after trivia immediately when it was over last Monday to watch the Republican convention.
And I believe that you said that politics is your sport.
Yeah, I mean, I like sports. I watch, And when I say I like sports, I was going to say I watch the playoffs of the major sports, but that is not true. I watch the Super Bowl every year. I watch the Lions games. I watch maybe a quarter of the Tigers games.
Okay.
I went to a Piston game. This is in Detroit, by the way, so in case for our...
Yeah, we're recording in Detroit.
Oh, that's right. You mentioned Detroit. Yeah,
Detroit,
okay.
Yes.
I went to a Pistons game 4 years ago, and that was the last NBA basketball I've seen. And I have forgotten what hockey is.
Okay.
So I like sports.
I'm going to need your white prison card now, though.
Well, sweet. Sweet. Yeah, hockey is just, I don't know, you can't see the puck. They should make that thing glow. Did that date me at all? Because there was a time, like, the puck used to glow. Are you aware of that?
Nope. I'm not aware of that.
They put like a microchip in the puck so it glowed.
Oh, yeah. I did see something on SportsCenter about that, like the invention of that.
It was not good.
Okay. All right.
So I would say politics is my sports. How a lot of guys my age think of sports, although my views on that have shifted 160 to 180 degrees over the last 12 years.
Okay.
I run 6 to 7 days a week in the morning, first thing. I do not like bullies, and I don't like hypocrites.
Okay.
So you mix all that in with an affinity for collared shirts and Bermuda shorts, and you get me.
Yeah, you were wearing both of those right now.
Indeed I am. Strappy sandals.
Okay, so kind of piggybacking off what you just said there, and what are some topics and areas that you're passionate about and why?
Like I mentioned before, I guess I would say I'm passionate about politics. I'm passionate about the political process. I'm extremely interested in how government functions, about how a group of people get together and choose leaders and the various agendas that go into that. I'm interested in the reasons people go into public service. Because you can people who are qualified for public service can make a whole lot of more money elsewhere. I'm interested in what makes them tick. And usually, I have a great deal of respect for those people.
So let's piggyback off of what you were just saying there. You were hitting lightly on who you are and what you're about, and some kind of topics came up in there. But talk about some topics, some areas of interest for you that you're passionate about, and why?
Regarding my interest in politics, there is, I think, I am passionate about that, and I just want to explain a little bit. There are people who, when I say politics is like a sport, there are people who actually treat it that way. I mean, the presidential race is often referred to as the horse race. It's covered like a sporting event. And I think that's much to our detriment because I think it trivializes the process, makes it more entertainment. It saps away the importance of what it means. And I am passionate about politics and the political process from the angle of what is it that makes these people tick? What causes people to go into public service? How is this issue? People tend to be interested in an issue for how it will allow one group of people to consolidate power, how it will weaken another group of people, who won, who lost, and I'm more interested in how it affects people on the ground. It's hard to find an area of life that doesn't come up in that process, be it about women's rights, be it about race, sexual politics, religion in the public square. If you have an understanding of the political nature of all of those, you can talk to anybody about anything.
Okay.
Really, pretty much.
Yeah, for me, I think areas of interest, there's going to be some overlap there, which will obviously come out in this program. But I'm fairly interested in the intersection of history and race in America, specifically. Obviously, there are plenty of issues of race that stem all around the world. Many things that I'm completely unaware of. You know, I don't know. I mean, to this day, I mean, I saw Hotel Rwanda. I don't know how everything got started between the Hutus and the Tutsis because it doesn't really affect me here.
Give you one guess as to another movie I didn't see. I always wanted to.
It's a good movie.
Totally wanted to.
Very sad, though.
Yes.
Very sobering. But to this day, I don't know really how that started and why, right? But it was around the topic of race. So when I talk about race, I am talking about particularly within the American context. Black, white, Latino, Asian, how history affects how everybody sees each other racially across those lines, cultural lines, racial lines, things like that. That's an area of passion for me. So the Black Lives Matter movement is constantly on my radar. What's going on there? What's being said? What's the good stuff that's being said? What's the bad stuff that's being said? What's being listened to? What is being not listened to? What is being misconstrued completely and misrepresented? So that's an area of passion for me. I'm also passionate about religion. You know, being a Christian like you, Kent, having grown up in the church, going to school for Christian ministry, getting a master's degree in religious education, working on another one in Christian apologetics. Religion is a very, very important topic for me. That does not mean that this program itself is going to be Christian. For anybody who's scared now, oh, two Christians talking about politics, it's going to be like Fox News. Not by any means. But I digress. We'll get to that a little bit later. So religion, race, you know, women's issues is kind of a big deal that's coming up now for me, which is interesting. The longer I'm married to my wife, the more I become aware of...
That's who that lady was.
Yeah.
She seemed to like you very much.
She does. Okay. But the longer that I'm married to my wife, the more access I have to issues that present themselves to women that I otherwise just wouldn't know about as a single guy just going through life. Or I might have heard about but didn't believe because, you know, it's not affecting me or I'm not seeing it firsthand affect someone I love.
If you had to – I know this is a tough question. If you had to pick among all of the things you're passionate about, all the things you're interested in, what would you say is the most pressing issue we're dealing with today?
Ooh. You know what? This is going to be an interesting one. I don't know if everyone's going to be able to track with me. Philosophy majors will be able to. But I think the most pressing issue is a – worldview issue, you know, the rise of postmodernism, the death of modernism, the rise of postmodernism. If you don't know what those are, Google them. I'm not going to define them here in this particular podcast. But the rise of postmodernism in we're now into a culture where everybody's outraged. Everybody's opinion is equally valid. All truth is true. You know, whatever's true for you is true for you. Whatever's true for me is true for me, which gets into this very relativistic worldview. And so it leads to how we, again, it's a worldview, so it leads to how we view the world, how we see everything. And so I think one of the most pressing issues is not race or religion in the public square or homosexuality or abortion.
I can already tell my answer to this question is ruined by you going first.
But, man. I mean, ultimately, I mean, it's fine. We can be on the same page. I'm fine with that. But, or we can be close to the same page. I don't even care. We can be totally on different pages. But I really think that ultimately the biggest issue that we are facing is not an issue that you're going to hear about in Fox News or MSNBC or CNN. It's a worldview issue. How people view the world is the biggest issue because you have to deal with the lenses that people are seeing the world through before you can properly address this hot button issue that everybody cares about. Because until you understand, hey, this guy's looking through this lens, that's why he sees abortion this way, and this guy's looking through this lens, that's why he sees abortion this way, or homosexuality, or, you know, women's rights, or Black Lives Matter movement. It's a worldview issue that needs to be dealt with. That's the biggest issue for me.
Okay, not to jump on the bandwagon. If I had to answer that question, I would say this, because I thought about it a lot, and then you went first. We might flop this in editing as to who answers this question first, because that would be great. A lot of people, if asked what's the most pressing issue of our time, would say it's racial reconciliation, and I don't think it is. And a totally different group of people would tell you it's abortion, and I don't think it's that either. And a smaller group of people, but one that I come in contact with every hour of every day, it will say it's the mainstreaming of homosexuality and the decay of the nuclear family. You can tell the garden that I grew up in.
As I walked into the building today, as I walked into Podcast Detroit, I literally watched a nuclear family disintegrate in front of me. Hashtag literal.
Hashtag literal. Nuclear decay. By the way, it is. I don't want to be that guy, but it's nuclear, not nuclear, because President Bush
Which
said,
one did I say?
You say nuclear.
Did I say nuclear?
It's nuclear.
Nuclear.
Now, okay. This is not going to be edited because I...
No, that's fine. That's fine. That's fine.
Okay.
I'm just glad you brought that up because...
Now, here's the thing. You just corrected me.
Yeah. Nuclear.
And I'm still saying it wrong in my head. Say it again.
Nuclear.
Nuclear.
There you go.
Nuclear.
It's like nucleus. Not nucleus. It's nucleus. Nuclear.
All right. Well,
we might make it shorter in post.
No,
but no.
Fine.
Okay.
No, that's fine. I'm glad. I'm glad this moment happened.
So anyway, I think the most pressing issue of our time is the ability of people to tell the difference between what's true and what isn't. And I think we have largely, as a culture and a people, seem to have lost it. I think sometime in the past decade, you can blame a lot of things for it. You can blame the media. You can blame politics. You can blame this politician or that politician. But I think we have...
Or this organization.
Or this organization. Yeah, yeah. I think we have slipped into a culture where facts do not matter.
That's the hard part about being like a history major.
Right.
It's because it's like it's considered that soft science.
The things that happened, I don't know. You say they happened.
Yeah, well.
But, you know, they may not have happened that way. My numbers aren't as important as your attitude toward them. You don't like my numbers? You can disregard my numbers and my science and my facts. And I think if...
And people will still listen to you.
Right. And I think if we keep going the way we are going, we are on the verge of losing the country. And I mean losing the country in the next 90 days. That if, and depending on when you listen to it, you will know what I'm talking about.
So if you're not getting this and you're listening, I think Kent and I come down in the same place that there is an objective reality that some people just don't know what the hell they're talking about. At times, that could be us. But that is that's a potentiality. Not everybody can be right at the same time about the same thing. It's just not possible.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, hopefully, as we bring on different guests to talk about different topics that that they disagree on, which we'll get to that in a little bit here, you'll start to see that. Like, both these people can't be right at the same time. They're saying vastly different things about this one thing. They can't both be right.
I can virtually guarantee you that if that happens and I'm on one side, the one who is right is me. Now, I understand that there might be an honest disagreement on that, but because...
By virtue of the fact that you hold the opinion,
by virtue
it
of the
must
fact,
be right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
Got it. So, who's a role model for you? I mean, if you could, talking about, worldview, talking about objective reality and truth and all that, who's a role model for you that if you could ask them a question about what we just talked about? Who's someone that you would that you look up to? Well, alive or dead, doesn't matter.
All right, I'll say something that makes me sound super old. Let me stress that by saying this, I never saw this guy work either, but I know who he is.
Okay.
And I would say Edward R. Murrow. For some of our younger viewers, I guess
listeners,
podcasters right. that yeah. are listeners, for some of our younger listeners, he was the first, quote unquote, great anchorman of the television era. He was the first face America trusted because it could see it. His business model was speaking truth to power. He was the world's most famous journalist at a time when a senator from, I want to say Wisconsin, but it may have been Minnesota. The difference between Wisconsin and Minnesota is admittedly not that much. A senator named Joseph McCarthy was trying to become famous and powerful by hunting for communists in America. Senator McCarthy was not the first demagogue in American politics who tried to criminalize people because of what they think. And he's clearly not the last, but Ed Murrow risked his career and at the time his freedom by going on television every night and telling America that a U.S. senator was a liar and a fraud and a danger to the country and because of that, he is a legend.
Okay. Because if I was gonna, if I was gonna pick someone that I look up to, someone that I quote fairly heavily, so it might pop up in almost every podcast that we do. C.S. Lewis.
Mm.
C.S. Lewis is author of The Chronicles of Narnia, is what most people know him as, Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. They made some movies out of that.
I did so not like them.
They were terrible movies.
Thank you.
Well, no, okay, so the new ones were terrible. Now, the funny thing is the BBC version, where it's like you could see like a guy dancing, like it was almost like a Japanese dragon where you could see like the feet underneath the head of Aslan, that was way better. But either way, C.S. Lewis was, you know, he wrote this great children's series. And as a kid, that was my first exposure to this guy, to this author. And as I got older, I started reading some of his adult texts. And then I saw, when I was reading his adult texts, how he was getting over on kids by writing his theological and philosophical thoughts from his adult books into his children's books. And like direct arguments from his book Mere Christianity, which is probably his magnum opus, right? Mm-hmm. Make it into The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, specifically that particular story out of the seven books. And just really fascinating guy for me. Taught at Oxford, was part of a group called the Inklings, was a contemporary and friend of J.R.R. Tolkien, who wrote Lord of the Rings. So just a brilliant, brilliant mind. And I remember having read Mere Christianity when I was 18 or 19 years old. Great book. If you've never read it and you have objections to religion in general, Christianity in particular, it's a book you should pick up. Even if you walk away disagreeing with it at the end, he makes sense. That's the great thing about him. So I remember reading Mere Christianity when I was about 18 or 19 years old. And not long after that, I read a book by a guy by the name of Bertrand Russell. And he wrote a book called Why I Am Not a Christian. It's a book of essays. He was a staunch atheist. And
that wasn't a title to meant to foster dialogue.
No.
He was not a Christian.
No, not at all.
Okay.
But he made a lot of good points. And I'm going, wow, you know, these are really good questions. These are really good indictments against religion in general, Christianity in particular. And I kept going, though. I feel like everything that he has said in this book has been answered somewhere else, point for point. And then I did a little research, and I found out that Mere Christianity was a series of radio addresses. Hmm. The BBC had asked C.S. Lewis to do these radio addresses, and he did them. And almost everything he wrote in this book was a response to Why I'm Not a Christian. And so it was kind of interesting to come across this book later after I'd already read Mere Christianity. So to put those two books in conversation is really quite fascinating. There's another author who's actually put C.S. Lewis and Freud in conversation with each other, which is really cool as well.
How do you feel about G.K. Chesterton?
Chesterton was good.
Very little about him, but I know that he also went by initials, so I figured he was probably of the same era.
Hopefully when I'm dead...
You
people will remember me as C.E. Moore.
C.E. Moore.
They'll be like, oh, C.E. Moore.
C.E. Moore.
That great C.E. Moore book. I don't know. But yeah, so C.S. Lewis has been very formative for me, and I think that a lot of what he said back in the 50s, in the 40s, are still very important today. I mean, coming to my answer of like, hey, it's a worldview issue. That's what his book deals with, is worldview issues back in the 40s and 50s. And so they might be dealing... worldview to shift from this modern era to postmodern, but I really think that he would still have a lot to say in today's world.
And C.S. Lewis was legendarily portrayed by Sir Anthony Hopkins in the movie Shadowlands.
Shadowlands, very boring movie.
I did not see it.
Boring, boring movie, but...
It's very boring?
It's
okay.
It's boring.
Which is surprising, considering that it's about your role model. I would think there would be something there.
Well, here's
you.
The thing. Like... he's an intellectual role model for me.
Okay.
I don't think that there's just, like, explosions behind
him. His life
him
wasn't super exciting.
Yeah. I don't think when he walks out the door, like, the house blows up and he's going to solve a mystery or something in an hour.
However, let me tee this up for you.
Okay.
This is a slow-pitch softball. Okay. Let's see if you can hit it. C.S. Lewis's death was totally overshadowed in the news by what?
The assassination of John F. Kennedy.
Same day. Yes. November 22nd, 1963.
Yes.
Oh, C.S. Lewis also died?
Yeah. You know another famous people who died same day?
Yes. Hold on.
Yep.
The Brave New World guy. Aldous Huxley.
Aldous Huxley. But do you know someone else who died on the same day as each other?
My dad. No, I... No, it wouldn't
be true. Princess Diana.
Oh. Okay, let me think. I thought you meant that day.
No, not that day, but Aldous Huxley did die.
Princess Diana and Mother Teresa.
And Mother Teresa.
Yep.
And Mother Teresa's death was completely overshadowed.
I don't know. I remember that pretty well.
Completely over... I mean, yeah.
You could say that Mother Teresa was the Farrah Fawcett of her day. And why do I say that?
I don't know.
Because Farrah Fawcett, you know who that was?
Yeah, I know who Farrah Fawcett was.
Farrah Fawcett died early in the day that Michael Jackson died in the afternoon.
So, I didn't know Farrah Fawcett was dead.
This is rough.
This is a rough day.
Yeah, this is she's a rough dead.
Day for me, anyway. Okay.
Cancer.
All right.
Another question that occurred to me, because we're here to try and foster dialogue, is what does that mean? What does that mean to you? Like specifically, what is the difference between dialogue and posturing? It's kind of a loaded question because the answer, of course, is dialogue is what I do and posturing is what he does. but what do you see as the difference?
No, that's a really good question. I think the huge difference is dialogue is exactly that. It's a willingness to talk with other people, to hear other people, to listen probably twice as much as you speak. I think that's a very important important thing. Posturing is what you see on Facebook. Okay. And I like that Facebook does this because, I mean, it literally shows you that people are posturing.
Should be a little red light that goes off, like a posture, a detector.
I mean, it's kind of there because, I mean, you're typing. You say something about politics, right? We're both talking about politics a lot on our Facebook right now. Everybody is. So you type something, and it turns into like a 90-comment battle, right?
Yep.
Everybody just wants to be heard. But as you're typing, you can see that ... a friend is typing.
If it's on your phone. I don't think you can do that on the web.
That's generally where I'm doing most of my typing from at this point.
I am old.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So I can see the ... a friend is typing. I think you can now see it on the computer as well.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure you can.
All right.
So you're constantly seeing people responding to what they think you're going to say, or they are willing to willfully misrepresent everything you have said, even though you've clearly stated over and over and over again, post after post after post after post, this is what I'm really saying.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come back, no, this is what you're saying. Like, no, well, I think I know what I'm saying. No, you don't know what you're saying. I know what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay. So I think that's posturing, preparing to respond before you've even fully listened to what the other person has to say. So that's posturing.
Okay.
Like, I only want my opinion to get out there. I don't care whether it even changes yours.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to hear me. I am right. Hear me roar. Whereas dialogue is, okay, look, I'm sitting across a table from you right now. We are talking about Cecil the Lion.
For our younger viewers.
For our younger viewers, Cecil the Lion was a big game hunting story. A guy went over to Africa, shot this lion. People lost their minds. Kent and I disagree on big game hunting.
And even that, we could talk about for an hour when it comes to the nuance. So it's not just like, I think you're evil if you do it, and Calvin is eating a lion burger as we speak. I'm saying that there are nuances to the, and we have fun with it, but we have fun with it in the spirit of dialogue.
Right.
So, yes.
And that's where it's important. I'm sitting down here, and this is how we're going to be building this show. We'll talk about that again in a few moments. But we sit down across from people that we disagree on whatever topic it is that we've agreed to sit down and talk about. We know we disagree sitting down, but I'm willing to hear what you have to say about this. And so that's the difference between dialogue and posturing, and that's why I draw that distinction there.
I think dialogue is an honest attempt. You know, this is ground we've been over, but, you know, it's just for the record. I think it's an honest attempt to try and to communicate your own position while understanding somebody else's and seeing, and while you hold it up to your own current position to see if you can identify flaws in your thinking. I try to approach discussion, and a lot of people say this, and a lot of people are lying. I try to approach a discussion on most things with the idea that I may have an opinion, but there is a 30% chance that I'm wrong, and I want to give you the chance to prove it. That said, I think there are some things that you can't have dialogue on. There is no room for dialogue on slavery. That ship, pardon the pun, has sailed. There is no room for dialogue on human sacrifice. There are some things that to give the issue, subject it to meaningful dialogue, is to give it dignity that it doesn't, that the issue doesn't deserve, and suggest there may be room for debate when there is not. Posturing is trying to prove that you are the best looking chicken in the yard. It's preening.
It's preening. Yeah.
Look what I know. Look how smart I am. Look what big words I can use to try and cudgel you into submission.
Look how fast I can cut and paste from Wikipedia.
Yes.
All right.
You can always tell, by the way, because the paragraphs and the sentences are weirdly indented. It's like, why are you wasting my time? What are you doing?
You left the note numbers in
yes.
there. Yes. Like, whatever.
Footnote numbers.
So let's then talk about the podcast itself.
Okay.
The name of the podcast is It's Leading Questions, right? Leading Questions with Calvin Moore.
Why did you... Not to jump in, but I did wonder, what is it, why did you give it that name? What caused you to start, why did you want to do this?
Well, a number of reasons. I think that, well, one is it's a play on words, because it's going to be an interview podcast, which we'll talk about again here in a few. And with interviews, you're generally asking leading questions. You want this conversation to go a particular direction, and so I am asking you questions that can lead us down a particular road. I don't know necessarily what your answer will be, but the question itself frames the conversation. And so there's that leading question. But then also, I think that there is a vacuum of leadership. And I was on a podcast recently called IT in the D. We're actually recording in the same space, Podcast Detroit. Where we talked about race in America. And again, I said earlier on, that's a big issue for me. That's important for me to talk about. And there were four other guys who were invited on as well. Had a really, really good, I want to say, four-hour conversation around race. I mean, we did not expect it to go maybe even 2 hours, and it went four. And it was absolutely beautiful conversation. Well, when it was all said and done, I was actually invited by Bob and David, who run Podcast Detroit and run IT in the D, to actually come in and start this own podcast. And if anybody is my friend and has seen my Facebook page, they know I've been lamenting over the shootings of unarmed civilians by law enforcement, and then of course the retaliatory strikes where people have been shot and killed, and in return, cops have been shot in return. You've got people walking into gay clubs in Orlando and shooting them up. You've got guys, I guess not in the United States, but in Japan, I guess a guy walked in with a knife and killed a bunch of people who were physically disabled. And so there's so much in this world that just makes me want to not even get out of bed. Just stay curled up in my blanket, safe, snug, secure, and just let the world pass me by. And one, with that invitation on the table, I just said, okay, no more just lamenting, no more using my Facebook wall to say, here's my opinion, hear me roar, just like everybody else. I want to actually be able to use my voice, because I can articulate, arguments fairly well. I can bring people around fairly well with different opinions, opinions different than my own. So I said, no more. I'm going to lead. And I'm a big proponent of the current iteration of Black Lives Matter. I think that it could use some leadership. I am not officially part of Black Lives Matter, but one of the huge indictments against it is, it lacks leadership. Mm-hmm. There's no leadership. And so what I am trying to do, especially as an African-American man in the United States, is to be a voice that leads. Maybe no one will ever hear this podcast, but no one will ever, ever be able to say, Calvin, what did you do to lead? Tell me, why did you decide to why did you decide to join me as a co-host on this? I mean, I know I sat down and I asked you.
You asked me to do it, and I said yes.
Okay, that was basically it. I mean,
okay. I am wildly narcissistic, and I love to have my voice out there. I love to preen.
this is your way of posturing every week, right? I'm not going to talk about this. Just listen to the podcast.
Listen to the podcast. I probably would have said no if Facebook were going better for me. But I find that if you look at my I had a family reunion last weekend, and people said, you know, I love your Facebook posts, and it's like, have you noticed that they have dropped off to almost nothing? If you were to look, because we are in the mad hot throes of a presidential election, which, not coincidentally, we were also 4 years ago. And if you looked at my Facebook activity from the end of July 2012, and you looked at my Facebook activity in the last 4 months, you would say that the 2016 version of me has given up. And to a point, I just don't need – I don't need it. I don't need the abuse that that comes from the people I go to church with, and not to put too fine a point on it, from within my own nuclear family. It caused Facebook, for what we talked about, it being about posturing versus dialogue, is more trouble than it's worth. I would like to talk about politics. I would like to talk about issues. And I feel like this gives me the chance to do it without anybody yelling at me.
Well, there could be some yelling.
There may be.
I'm fine with passionate response.
Yeah.
But you're actually faced with – I think that the screen, the digital screen, obviously, gives people bravado.
Yep.
Like you would never say that to me. I mean, they're I think both you and another buddy of mine who will remain nameless, you two get into tiffs on my Facebook wall, and I think both of you have privately messaged me, like, if I ever see this guy, I'm going to punch him in the throat.
Oh.
Like, you don't say it in the thread, but you say it to me privately, and I'm like, look, just chill out.
No, I wouldn't. I don't think I've said that. I will tell you straight out, I think he's a jackass. And he might think that of me, but the difference is I'm right.
So what are we talking about here? Okay, so real quick. Talked about the name, but I want to talk about what this program is. Okay, so what Leading Questions actually is it is a panel discussion program that is going to happen on a weekly basis. God willing, it'll happen on a weekly basis. And so what we want to do is we want to get people who disagree on a particular topic to sit down in a room with each other and talk about that topic for an hour. And we want people to live with the implications of their beliefs. So not just, hey, you think this about this topic and the person across the table from you thinks the exact opposite, you two need to fight it out, but hey, you think this about this topic. Not meaning to scare off people who are not religious. Again, this podcast itself is not going to be religious in nature. We might hit on those topics every now and again, but that's not the scope. But really, the whole program is to sit people across the table from people who disagree with them, so they are forced to actually talk with them face to face, and then also to deal with the implications of their beliefs. So in the next few weeks, real quick, just some of the topics that we're going to be looking at over weeks and months. And so we'll have religious communities' response to public tragedy. And when I say religious community, I mean we're going to have, you know, pastor, a priest, an imam, a Jewish rabbi, all in the same room talking about that. So it's not, again, not a Christian podcast. We're going to have lots of different people who are saying, hey, people are getting shot and killed. How does a religious community respond to this?
Because 2 seconds there, that really sounded like the setup for a joke.
It does. It does sound like you're walking into a bar, right? You know. But then we'll be talking about things like gun control, candidates and morality. Does it matter, you know, whether your candidate is moral or whether they can just get the job done? Black Lives Matter versus All Lives Matter. Who owns the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.? Everybody always wants to use him to bolster their point, right?
Boy, have I got a great statistic for that one.
Everybody's got a statistic. I don't like your statistics, so I'm just going to avoid it and be wrong over here, but think I'm right. Feminism, coups. I mean, you just had the coup over in Turkey. Refugees. How do we deal with refugees? Oh, all lives matter. Great. I got these refugees over. Nope.
No. When I said all lives matter.
We'll talk about ISIS, war, LGBTQ community, things as innocuous as plastic surgery, same-sex adoption, gentrification. I mean, so we're going to be all over the place. And part of the reason I want to be all over the place is, one, again, Kent and I are Christians, but we're talking about what everybody else in the world is talking about. And I never want it to be said that we only talk about one issue. Oh, look, you got homosexuality and abortion. Those are your topics. I don't even really want to talk about those topics. I'm sure they'll get talked about because everybody's talking about them. But there's a lot of things that matter to people in this world. Right now, honestly, if I'm honest, while abortion is a huge issue and I have my friends who that's the thing that they think is the most pressing issue in the world, for me, gun control is a more important issue, personally. I can argue back and forth with people about that, and that's fine. That's what this venue is for. That's what this context is for. So we're going to hit on a lot of topics on this podcast, and we're getting people who have different points of view on this podcast. So if I say, hey, we're going to talk about gun control, I'm not just going to get a lobbyist from the NRA to sit at the table and just tell us why guns are great.
Nor would he come.
No. But that's not what we're going to do. We're going to get somebody who's pro-gun sitting across from someone who's anti-gun. We're going to have someone who's had a kid who accidentally got shot. We're going to have someone whose kid was involved in gang warfare. So different background, different ideas of how these things affect everyone so that you have to live with the implications of your beliefs. Because your beliefs don't take place in a vacuum. They take place in the real world. You bump up against them every single day. So that's kind of what the whole program is about. Those are some of the topics that we're going to be talking about. Kent, last question here. What are some things that you hope, when we're done, when we hang up the microphones, when we drop the mic and we hang up the headphones and all that, what do you hope listeners walk away from after listening to each episode?
I hope a listener walks away thinking that that they learned something. I hope that they walk away feeling better informed and more able to, if they didn't have an opinion, more able to form an intelligent one based on hearing both sides of a topic. I hope they feel better prepared to have those discussions in their daily lives based on the example, hopefully, of people who disagree but have the respect to disagree and not hate. And I feel like every example should have 3 points, and I only had 2. So that's it.
That's fine. I'm hoping that, yeah, again, same thing. But I one of the big things is, again, learning to disagree well is probably the biggest thing for me. Hopefully, you know what, if you come in and you hear something and it moves the needle a little for you, great. That's obviously mission accomplished. But ultimately, this is a exercise in listening. Because it's a podcast, I want people to be able to disagree and disagree well. And so at the end of the conversation, someone can say, I mean, you can go into a conversation at the very beginning thinking someone's a total moron for holding to this particular viewpoint. But I want someone to, at the end of the conversation, be able to, whether they're in the conversation or whether they're listening to it by podcast, I want people to walk away going, you know what? I still disagree with you fundamentally, but I don't think you're crazy now. If we accomplish that goal, then this program is a success in my mind. Unfortunately, that's one of those things that's not super quantifiable. I don't have numbers on that. But that's really a big hope for me, is that people walk away respecting another human being who they disagree with on a fundamental level.
I'm just excited to hear that we have call-in capability. So it's 1-976 DJ the Stooge.
But
call.
If you do have questions that you would like us to talk about, topics that you'd like to talk have us talk about, or someone that you think would be good to be on a panel, you can email us at leadingquestionsdetroit@gmail.com. I know it's not – I mean, it takes place in Detroit, but it's not about Detroit. So leading
questionsdetroit@gmail.com. You can email us. Thanks so much. This has been the inaugural episode of Leading Questions with Calvin Moore. I'm Calvin Moore, and
I'm back to the mic. I'm Kent Strait.
We're gonna get this right. We're gonna get it. We'll get it down.
Okay.
In the future. But thanks so much for listening,
guys. I have to learn to anticipate your moves.
Yes.
Okay.
Here's that. Thanks so much for listening, guys.
Bye.
This is a previously recorded episode.